Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles with Flower. We have some new equipment tonight. Yes, hopefully no more getting bumped off the line and all kinds of other issues. So we're going to see if this new piece of equipment works and some other adjustments as well with it. That's what we were doing right before I went on the line. So they played a kind of promo thing, and then here I am, all set and ready to go. Yeah. And in case you don't know, this is a show about metaphysics and physics and science in general and spirituality and ontology and cosmology, you name it. It's, we're going to be talking about it tonight for sure. And if you haven't listened before, Why Life is really kind of a great name for this show because if you haven't figured it out by now, what I claim is that life is the growth of our Creator or God. So why life is so that our Creator can grow. That's a kind of radical view for some people. A lot of people think that, well, if there's a God, it's just going to be sitting around just, you know, doing nothing or something. Not at all, because that God would be completely deterministic, and there wouldn't be any growth to it or us. It would be kind of a dumb universe. But instead, instead, we have a dynamic universe, which is really cool. Tonight we're going to be talking about time travel, but time travel without something called temporal paradox. What the heck is that? Well, you're going to find out. And a lot of people have asked me to do a show on time travel, not necessarily on time. They say, yeah, I've read your book. I don't know, you can explain time. It's like all that physics stuff in it, and it's kind of hard to understand. What do you mean time does this and that? But so tonight, we're going to use some of the applications that have not necessarily been incorporated in prior shows, as well as try to explain time from a little different angle and still include a lot of the old concepts if you've listened to some of the old stuff. And, in addition, for those of you who have read the textbook Life's Hidden Meaning, now that's going to be helpful because you'll have the more scientific side of it, including some of the diagrams, pictures, et cetera, that are in the book, to help you better understand tonight. I can't, unfortunately, do those via the radio, but you know, that may be coming. We're looking at some kinds of video connections here. So that could be in our future. But for right now, we're going to just be doing it with me yakking. So let's, as usual, get to some of the definitions, because I like to define things at the beginning of a show so that you and I and everybody, most other people, know what I'm talking about and how I'm defining what time is, because that's a big issue. Time. What is time? Time is a part of space. Now, you might say, oh, you mean it's a part of space. Who said that? Well, the first guy that actually said it in a kind of cogent way was Albert Einstein in 1905. And he had this thing called specific relativity, a very specific part of the ideas of his general theory of relativity, which came much later, by the way. But nonetheless, I mean, like when I say much later, like 10, 15 years later, he came out with general relativity, which is not as specific, and it covers a lot more territory than just time. But in his theory about time, he found that time was relative, and it was connected to space. So he didn't call space space, he didn't call time time, he called time space, or space time, depending upon what you prefer, as one thing. And you might say, well, how is that one thing? Well, if you think about it, when we have what we call space, which we seem to have all around us at this particular junction in the dimensional history of us as we exist today, there's space everywhere, right? You can see space. It space and time go together. In order to traverse space, it separates time from space and removes some of the time that is integral with the space. So we always say to go anywhere, do anything, even to think some things, takes time, and therefore is incorporated in part of space. Another way to understand it is that when space in any way contains something, which we call something usually energy or matter. Matter is a dense form of energy. But when space contains something, that something distorts the space by its presence, and it kind of stretches it, yeah. And it also causes changes in the time. That's what Einstein said. Now, in reality, he's not quite right about that. According to some more modern theories using advanced forms of quantum physics. But, you know, I mean, that's okay. I mean, he kind of reverses some things about that. Because energy doesn't necessarily distort space. It actually distorts much more of time. Now, a lot of people say, well, if you said that Einstein said time and space are kind of the same thing, they're just joined together, why would you say it distorts time more than it distorts space? No. Well, because the energy is there due to the distortion, not reversed. Energy manifests itself due to the fact that there is a distortion in time and space, and you end up with some kind of energy. And that has to do with a thing called light. Okay. All right. So when things are moving along at the quote-unquote speed of light, you have a change in the whole issue. And theoretically, something that did have energy would become infinitely heavy, infinitely large, and kind of strange. But in reality, when you convert something to the ultimate speed, which we call light, when something becomes enlightened, it no longer separates any time from space, no longer does so. And it doesn't take any time at all to go from one place to another place as far as the light itself is concerned. The light doesn't take any time. To us, who are living at a different speed than light, much slower speed, it does seem to take time. So it's a kind of confusing issue. But this has all been, this was discovered really 110 years ago, a long time ago, actually. And so nowadays, when we talk about time, we're really talking about this time-space continuum. And in terms of what I've written about, it gets a little more deeper than just what I just described. I know I'm glossing over this because a lot of this I've covered in much greater detail in other shows. For some of you, it may be new and therefore confusing. But for the rest of you, you probably have some idea what I'm talking about. Okay, so if you really are enlightened, you're in an enlightened state, that means that the activity that you're doing takes absolutely no time at all to do it in. And there's no manifestation of energy whatsoever. It requires no energy because the activity itself is fully intelligent and therefore removes no time from space. Thus, all things that take time are actually mistakes. They're selfish. They're not enlightened anymore. They are some form of less than light, which we call shades of darkness. And the result is, in metaphysical terms, a person who is using up a lot of time, is separating it from space in enormous amounts, is creating a tremendous amount of energy. And that energy, instead of it being intelligent activity, produces forces. And the forces sometimes are also referred to over a period of time as karma. It's very, very interesting because all this is really based upon science and physics rather than just kind of like some kind of, oh, well, that's what karma is. It's like something bad happens to you if you don't do the right thing. But really nothing bad in a sense is happening other than time is being wasted, it's being separated from space, and causes, therefore, are separated from effects. So something you do today may not fully be realized in its effect for hundreds or even thousands of what we call years because so much time is created by the forces imposed from all the energy that is produced from being selfish. Enlightenment is a non or unselfish state. And when we're in that enlightenment, moving at the speed of light, the cool thing about it is that we, at the same time, are producing no forces, and we're producing no energy. So we don't have to worry about that strange effect of energy growing tremendously as you go closer and closer to the speed of light, because the reverse actually happens when you hit the speed of light. Wow, pretty cool. But there's a lot to be said about some of that, and we're going to get to it today, because this has to do with time travel. Today we're talking about time travel, not just time, but time travel. I'm going to describe real time travel, the real deal, and I'm going to tell you how you can do it, and why it can be done, and why certain other things cannot be done. Now, most of what I'm telling you is not really anyplace else. So, kind of like if you buy into this model and doesn't understand today's theories, you're going to need to read my stuff, because I don't know where else to refer you to, because I don't know anyone else who's got their own, that has this level or this kind of understanding. Okay, what is temporal paradox? Time travel, but without temporal paradox. Temporal paradox is the concept of going back in time and changing something about the history of time, supposedly, so that the effect is no longer the same, and you create, in some circumstances, a paradox to your own existence and the existence of the past and the future together, past, present, and future together. And so the results are that, theoretically, you would end up with a collapse in dimensional stability and an inability to have concurrent events taking place as they were in the past. Things would be illogical and unreasonable. As an example, let's say one temporal paradox that's used a lot, and Einstein used this, you go back in time and you shoot your grandfather, all right? Well, if it's you going back in time and you shot your grandfather, how could you have done that? Because then you wouldn't have been born to go back in time to shoot your grandfather. That's called the temporal paradox. In other words, you could do both things, but when you do them together, they don't make any sense, and then the whole system kind of falters in logic and reason. Now, the time travel I'm talking about today is without the temporal paradox. And it doesn't incorporate any elements of temporal paradox in it because of the nature of how time travel can really be done. Once you understand how it can really be done, you'll see why temporal paradox isn't part of it. And it has to do with the whole idea of enlightenment. Oh, pretty cool. But I'm kind of giving you a cliffhanger with that, so I'm not going to tell you much more about it for at least a few minutes anyway. So, okay, so that's what the temporal paradox is. Time travel without it is the only kind of time travel that could be reasonable to our minds and even reasonable in a universe such as ours. Now, a lot of people say, well, why can't there just be, you don't have a temporal paradox because you just go into an altered universe where it's parallel to this one, but all kinds of other things can happen. The problem with all those theories of parallel universes is, in contradiction to what I wrote in Chapter 2 of Life's Hidden Meaning, which is that God created this universe with a thought that's so strong that a number of things are not possible. A whole bunch of things are excluded. It's called the exclusion principle in quantum physics. And a lot of people say, well, I thought quantum physics is that anything's possible, so anything can happen. No. Quantum physics does not say that. It says that that which is possible will eventually happen. And that which is not possible will never happen. Okay, so that's quantum physics. A lot of people have confused that, putting those two ideas sort of together and saying, well, then anything's possible and everything will happen, and therefore parallel universes make sense. No, that's not what quantum physics says. And so God's field of thought is so huge that when it created the universe, nothing that it creates within the universe, which we call life, and it isn't a profound creator. It's like this subtle creator. It creates the ability for life to be, but life is still self-created, not created by God, in a weird way, too. So interestingly, in that process that it is involved in, and how it created the universe so we can all be free in our thinking, free in our interactions, there needs to then be an understanding that, okay, there's a lot of things that are not possible because God chose to exclude them from the universe. Actually, you could even say parallel universes were excluded by God, because that leads to a kind of anarchical, chaotic sense, and it's a godless universe. And it's the pre-God state, actually. It's before God existed. In theory, that's what you had. But God is a being that, out of limitless possibilities, it created a limited possibility of itself and then of the universe that we exist in. I won't go too far into that, but that's really fascinating, even learning about that. And that also is in the textbook I wrote. So the cool thing about this now is that we live in a very limited universe, although it's, by our standards, huge, and we have great possibilities, but not infinite. And therefore, you can't go back in time and go into some other timeline, at least not in the way most people think of it, that is an alternate reality and carries on indefinitely in its own existence. You can go back in time or forward and live in a virtual reality that permits you to experiment and to do quite a few number of things, yeah, that will permit you to, in reality, be in an existence in which, for all intents and purposes, it's like living in a different universe, but it quickly dissolves, almost instantly dissolves, as soon as your thought, which animates it, is gone. So that process, and that, if you go with, let's say you went with 100 other people, all 100 of you could create the reality, but when you leave, the that part of the universe ceases to be, and it doesn't go on its own in a parallel fashion, which is the way most parallel universe theorists choose to create their parallel universes. So it's that doesn't work. So that's what I'm trying to say, is that parallel universes do not make sense, and they won't work. But there is this other dynamic that I'm going to get into. And there's actually a part of the universe where, as long as you're there, you can do exactly the things I'm stating. And for intents and purposes, that part of the universe is referred to as the monastic, or some people call it just the mental subworlds. And these subworlds collectively together are a dimension of time and space. There are 7 subworlds technically, although there's a lower and an upper. It's kind of segregated into 2 different sections. The first 3 are called the conceptual, and the lower 4 are called the examples or the concrete parts of the monastic world, the mental world. So you got all these different subdimensional aspects to this place where you can go into and live within time, because time is a whole part dimensionally of this dimension. It's actually the whole thing. What we think of as time here is predominantly the past, with very little of the present or future in existence for us in the physical realm. That has to do with the dominance of energy. The energy is so dense here that so much time is separated from space that you can't even recognize time anymore. You can't really live in it. We're only living in the past part. You can't live in the full part of time. You can't live in the present. You can't live in the future. And we know that to be true. I mean, just try to live in the present even. That's really not possible. Whenever something is in the present, by the time you recognize its presence, it's the past. You see the problem with that. That's because it's so separated, timeless. But in this monastic world, you can literally go back and live in the past. You can go forward and live in the present. But again, these are virtual parts, and they only exist as a person does one of 2 things. If they are not enlightening the past or the present, then those pieces of time remain separated from space, and the person can explore and be involved with them while they are into the virtual reality of them, but it will not remain intact. The only way to make it remain intact is to enlighten it, which we're going to get into, like I said, but I'm going into it a little bit now. So you got to enlighten it, and if you enlighten it, then it starts becoming permanent, because enlightenment, light makes everything permanent. Light is God's thought. And once you're into God's thought, then things remain forever. Pretty cool. All right, now you might say, well, okay, what does all this mean? How does this play out there? If you're really big into going into time traveling, then do you really have to wait till you're dead from here, the physical realm, and probably dead from the astral realm, because there is kind of this thing called the Akasha. But the Akasha in the astral world is so incomplete in time that no part of it can be enlightened from the perspective of just the creative imagination of an astral person. You've got to be completely monastic. Now, in theory, you could live in the astral world, you could even live in the physical world, and be unified in all three of your bodies, the astral in the middle, but the physical, the astral in the middle, and you could then, at that point, live an experience that crosses all three-dimensional parts of time and space, and live in an enlightened reality that brings together time so close together that it becomes enlightened with space, and everything is done with intelligence and activity, and no energy becomes present. That means you're getting rid of all the karma of the past and all the things that you're involved with in the past, all the karma that you might be doing if you were making mistakes in the present, and you're making a future, creating a future that's completely enlightened. Whoa. When you're into that kind of activity, which is called enlightened activity or intelligent activity, then the result is that, hey, cool, now that time doesn't separate from space, and you've created a completion of time with no karma. All the karma's been joined together, so all causes and effects are instantaneously joined. And you're living out the perfection of our universe. Wow. Now, what does that perfection of the universe mean? What does that really involve? Well, eventually, if we go to the end of our universe as we understand it, God and all beings, together with God, have created a perfect universe. But the perfect universe doesn't happen until the very last of life has become fully enlightened and has become joined with God in its thought. And then that being, the very last of the beings that are like that, moves out of this universe as all other ones have. And the universe has completed itself in terms of enlightenment. When that takes place, it's like all of the bad things that ever happened, all of the things that were ever wrong with the universe, all of the mistakes that were ever made, all of the time that it took to get to that point, has come together as one glorious point in which there is no more time that's separated from any space. No time is taking place at all. And the entire universe, as all of its experiences, is one solid, great creation. An amazing creation of perfection. We're not there yet. No. But someone could get there in a facsimile, even before the rest of the universe does, by enlightening their senses and their experiences for themselves. They can actually experience that even before it's actually done for all life. So one part of life can do it for itself, but all life has to do it for all that exists here and for God to become complete. Wow, it's pretty cool stuff. So there's a really amazing thing about this. Time travel is possible. Not only possible, we do a bit of it. Human beings do a bit of time travel in each lifetime. We really do. There's no question about it, and I'll explain about that now. when we die from the astral world and go on to live in the monastic or mental world, a good bit of our time in the beginning, which is so separated from space, is us in the mental akasha, where we are reliving all the selfish experiences from this life and those that remain from prior lives. And when we relive those experiences, provided our senses can maintain themselves long enough to, and don't diminish so badly from all the forces that we create while we're reliving it and continuing to be selfish. But while we relive it, we become less and less selfish. That's the idea. And remember, we come back out of it. We don't just stay in these experiences. We come out and we meditate and we think about it. And we say, next time I get caught into that, I go into that. Because you're always semi-conscious that you're in there once you get into it. But you're going to say, well, next time I'm really going to work on this. I'm really going to try and do better. And so you relive the same experiences over and over again. They're connected by the commonality of your own selfishness. They're not connected by literal time. So it isn't Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It's Saturday 1 year, Tuesday of 5 years from then, and maybe Wednesday of a decade away. Well, common events are connected together by the same kind of self-focus or selfish thinking. And you want to work on those, and so you're connected from one to the next and next by the commonality of the thought. And the thought is building this time barrier, because the causes of what you're doing are not connected to the effects. You do something selfish today, and the effect may not be felt by you or most other people even for years to come. Well, when you start going into the mental akasha, you start accelerating your karma, bringing together closer and closer the effects to the causes. Eventually, the goal is to bring the cause and the effect to the same point in time. No time then is separated, and you've reached intelligent activity instead of selfish activity. And instantly, the karma is gone from that particular part of your own existence. The result is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You're in an enlightened state. You're using no energy whatsoever to do whatever it is that you're involved in doing, because you're in an enlightened state. Your senses don't age. You don't age, actually. And you're getting into the experience of being able to alter time. Now you could say, well, okay, is that just changing things for yourself if you enlighten time? No. It changes it for everybody from that point forward, because your karma isn't just your karma. It's the karma of everybody else. It has some effect on everything. Everything we do that's selfish has some effect on everybody else in some small way. You go way out there. But you're stopping all that. At least you're a part in it. And so the results are phenomenal. Yeah, it's really cool. You're just in a place now where you get to relive your life. And get it right, finally. You may have to go through it 100 times or 1,000 times, but you eventually get it right. And right means enlightenment. And enlightenment is like the state of being the soul that you're trying to live at. And it's an amazing process. People change, literally from people, persons, into their souls through this process. That's how you get back to the full state of being your own self. You grow yourself back to being your soul by enlightening your senses and your mind and your interactions in the akasha. When you do that, everybody else can think easier. You've created truth not only in your mind, but in the minds of everybody you interacted with, and all those people who then interacted with all other people. After a period of time, everybody affects everybody else in some way. Yeah. So that's how you get to do it. You get to travel in time through your own experiences in time travel. Or, let's say that you've enlightened yourself to a really high level, you start helping others, and you serve the others who are struggling with it. So eventually you get to experience all time, past, present, and future, for all things in all time till the end of time, which is the joining of all time together in what is called a single moment, it's called, the picture of it is a dot in a giant circle. Really, that's a metaphysical principle. It's a metaphysical symbol. And that means that you've become the whole shebang from your own creation of enlightenment in yourself. Wow. Just really, really neat thing. And therefore, the idea of time travel isn't just limited to only our own perspective. A lot of people have told me when they've read some of the stuff I've written, say, well, isn't that just for yourself? No, because eventually when you become a server and you're serving everyone else, it's for everything. You get to experience everything about our universe eventually if you become a great server. And I've done a little bit of the serving myself. That's how I know about this stuff. I'm not talking about it theoretically. I'm talking about it from some experience. Not enough to say, well, I've done it all. But enough to say that it gives one tremendous perspective because you're living in the past. And once you awaken from it or once your service really gets going, you can start co-serving with people who are living in the future, the present and the future, actually. So all three parts of time are now being brought together. And when you live in the future, you're living virtual realities with hundreds of other soul-like people. Sometimes, eventually, souls themselves, once you get back to that state. And you're able to co-create together, changing nuances of your interactions with others, trying to balance out what mistakes they're making, which is selfishness, and trying to help them become less and less selfish while you yourself remain as unselfish as possible, hopefully reaching a state of enlightenment. And you got to be way better to get into the future than just to deal with the karma of the past. But once you get to that way better place, the coolest thing about existence is that you are now living fully, past, present, and future, of just about anything and everything there is. Yeah. It could be to that level. I mean, it starts less than that, but it could grow to that. What an experience. Now, I haven't gotten there. I can't say that I have. That full time spectrum of time travel from past, present to future, I have only experienced the past part, a little tiny bit of the present, because of some contemplative help that I have given in the past for people coming out of the Akasha. But still, it's not anywhere near the full spectrum that, unfortunately, I'm not going to have probably the experience in the very near future of, because of certain issues. But nonetheless, it's really an amazing thing that you can travel in time. Now, why is there no temporal paradox? Well, because temporal paradoxes are only caused by selfishness. They're only caused by doing things that are ungodly. And that's what bars you from having the temporal paradox, because you can't do the time traveling if you're being selfish. So the results are that the more selfish you are, the less you could theoretically do any kind of time traveling. Now, evil has been trying to find a way around this for a long time. And evil wants to get to the fifth mental world, because that's the first place that time has any kind of wholeness, so to speak, to it. You get the three, then having the sixth, seventh, sixth, and fifth mental worlds gives you all three parts of time, so to speak. But not really. I mean, it's many parts of it. But that's what evil's been trying to do, so it could change time in reverse direction. It would like to make things darker and have the universe effectively go backwards. There would be temporal paradoxes, but it doesn't care about that. But the problem is that God apparently has set up the universe so it can't happen. So when evil finally gets control in a world where all three of these mental issues are present, it causes that world to separate from the rest of the universe and it creates some other really strange effects in itself. But it can't exist in tandem with the rest of the universe in a normal way. I have to be careful what I say here because I can't reveal certain things about evil at this point. But nonetheless, so this weird thing that they're trying to do is actually being experimented on right here on Earth. There's virtually no place else in the universe that you've even gotten close to it except like on Earth and a few other planets. I mean, really small number. I mean, Earth is like, okay, this is the bad place for laboratory tests. Yeah, it is. I mean, this is the place where the worst things could be happening. Well, at any rate, we're going to come back to that. I think we'll take. Let me see if we're going to take a break at this point. No, I think we'll go on for a couple more minutes, and then we'll take a break, because actually we got started a little bit late. So I'll take a few more minutes here, and then we'll take a break. Let your minds kind of cool down. I know I'm throwing a lot of stuff out there. It's going all over the place. Aren't I? There's a lot to talk about. I mean, this is a cool subject, but it's probably too much for one night. So don't be surprised if there's, you know, show number two or three somewhere in our future. But then again, that's fine, because time travel is possible, and we can do it later rather than right now if we need to. All right. So one of the things, yeah, about evil is that it would love to be able to reverse everything I'm saying and to be able to really separate time and separate karma so that effectively it could get a lot more energy going, because it likes energy and power. It's its trip. But it can't do that very effectively because it produces so much force that it's got to kind of like have its own little, we'll say, playground to do it in. And can't do it very much outside of that playground. Now, it still gives a tremendous ability to influence relatively selfish people who aren't necessarily evil, which is its main reason for trying to do it at all at this point. But time travel is an amazingly reasonable explanation for how the universe actually works. And so most of the things that we think are complicated or problematic, once you understand the explanation of time in terms of being part of space, and what time really does, it's a qualitative issue. It gives us an experience of what the consciousness quality of the space is. The higher the level of consciousness in the space itself, the less the time is separated, and the more inclusive all the things are that are taking place within the space, and the more intelligent each activity becomes. Also, there's less forces and less energy that's coming out of people choosing to do interactions with others. Really, really an interesting point. That within itself is pretty much a big deal. So the dark side would love to increase the forces for us, but not for them. And that's one of the problems they have, is that the model of time that I'm explaining, which is the real way time works in my opinion, of course, in my experience, makes it extremely difficult for evil to be able to take control of higher dimensions of time and space other than the astral ones that they control right now. And to some extent, they influence the 6 and 7 subworlds of the monastic world on planets that are very hampered by evil, such as Earth. Most places don't even have that problem. But as long as they can't get to the 5th, they can't control time, and they can't affect things so that they produce a lot of forces in other people's lives without those people even necessarily being affected or possessed by the evil itself. Something that's interesting to know about. Okay, so let me, now at this point, I think it's time for us to take a break. So we will do so, and we'll be back, give or take, in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was just talking to Don. He's sort of filling in for Seth as the engineer tonight. Don is like the manager of the station. Seth has got a night off. And we're still playing around with stuff, so if some things go a little awry, if you lose connection or something, just call back. We're working on, we just changed one of the lines from one kind of system to another. We're doing all kinds of things behind the scenes to try to make me sound as good as possible, you know, and make it as good a show, good as an experience as possible. It may take more than just this show to get us dialed in because we've changed some equipment. And when you change equipment, a lot of things change. I can tell you that I like what I'm hearing so far better, but the important thing is what all of you out there are hearing, you know. And we've got, you know, a lot of people listening on Skype, and that's sometimes when we monkey around with this equipment, we may lose some of you off of the Skype line. Because Skype is still very temperamental, almost experimental. And what it is you can have, in this particular instance, up to 1,000 listeners listening in on phone, by phone. Some of you are already doing that, I know. So it's no news to you, but the cool thing about it is that you don't have to be tied to a computer. You can be anywhere and just listening in. Now, it may not be as high a quality of sound, and sometimes you may get bumped off if there's a hiccup or whatever. So that's the only inconvenience, and then you have to call back, of course, trying to get back on. You may miss a few words of what I'm talking about or whatever. But remember, you can always re-listen to any show within a few days after the show has been aired. It's available. So you can go on and listen to that show and hear it as many times as you want. So that's a good thing. And that gives you the opportunity to maybe hear some things that I go by pretty quick on. Because I know you can re-listen, so sometimes I won't explain it as much as I might have if I thought you only had one crack at it. So that's the good thing about it. Okay, so back to our explanation, my explanation about time travel. And I'm going to give you some more examples because, you know, in the first part I try to speak very conceptually. Usually burn some brain cells out in the process, you know, maybe my own as well. And then I'd like to get more into examples and then talk about more concrete issues about this, et cetera, as the show moves on. So that's where we're at now, some examples. Well, okay, how come... the universe is created this way. Why not have it so time is the way we think of it as it is an illusion? Like the past is the past and it never can be changed. The present is the present as it's happening, what we call now. But the future is something unwritten that just sort of goes off. And once you get to the future as it is now, it becomes the present and then it moves to the past and everything seems hunky-dory. Why isn't time just like that? Well, the problem with that is it doesn't allow us to grow within all elements of the universe. it only allows us to have growth in some ways, in very limited ways, in the future. And then we're tremendously impacted too much by the past in that model. And the past would continuously drag us down like an anchor. And you would have all the paradoxes that come from karma then. So a person would be spending almost all of their time undoing their karma and virtually none of the time of actually growing. And that's one of the criticisms of people who know something about karma but don't understand time. And so they think that that would be the result, and they're pretty much correct if that's how time was. But time isn't that way. We actually can change the past and change the effects of mistakes in the past so that they go away and the universe becomes corrected for more than just ourselves but for all other creatures and all other thinking beings. Once we do that, it has a grand effect which lessens the karma for ourselves and everybody else simultaneously, and you have a synergy between all the people who are doing this, which I'm going to talk about next, and that is the good news, because the other way, karma would be like an albatross that kept growing to the point where you'd never be able to get out of it. True, really. So that model doesn't even work. You'd have a universe that just dies. It kills itself with all the karma. All right, so let's talk about how this works in a practical way. When we live in the physical world, we are very illusioned and quite selfish. We create a lot of causes that may not come out as effects until a lifetime or more ahead of us. Because they're fairly atrocious things, they're repetitive in their selfishness, and we don't pay attention to or care about the long-term effects. And so these things stay around. They stay part of our spiritual genes, sometimes called permanent animus. And so our spiritual genes carry the karma. It limits us in our next lifetime in terms of our senses and our abilities. And it's a tremendous drag on us. Over time, because of all of those factors and more, we would become paralyzed by the accumulation of our karma. Especially about midpoint in all the lifetimes we live, we probably wouldn't be able to do anything and wouldn't move ahead at all. But that isn't how it works. That would be the bad news. And luckily, that isn't how it works. God said, nah, that's not my kind of universe. I'm not going to create that. Maybe evil will try to create it, but I'm not going to create it. So what God said is, hey, this thing about time has to be flexible. Got to have flex time, you see. Time that can be changed by each and every person if they enlighten themselves or get closer to enlightenment. As they do so, then the correction of karma becomes accelerated. All of karma becomes accelerated. And causes and effects get much closer together. And you'll know, if you've read Life's Hidden Meaning, that that is one of the most confusing things. It's really heavily dealt with in Chapter 11 on reincarnation, which is mostly contained within, is mostly about karma. And it explains why it's so critical that karma has to accelerate, although people hate it, that are spiritually disciplining themselves because they accelerate their karma. and to the novice or somebody who's just starting off, and they may even realize it's happening. They may say, gee, I'm starting to enlighten myself. I'm starting to correct all the things I was doing bad. And now I'm paying more for it because the karma is accelerated. I'm getting more effects faster than if I just was a louse, a no good person, and I would just slow down my karma. Yeah, slow it down and make it almost impossible to deal with and miserable when you have to. Better to speed it up and get it over with. I know. Human beings don't necessarily choose that path all the time. But the spiritual person needs to and needs to recognize that the acceleration in karma is not a terrible thing. It gets rid of it faster and it solves so much for so many others. Because in the service that you're doing for yourself, it's compounded by thousandfold for so many others or 10,000-fold. That's why it's so important. So important to go through this life with real responsibility and be willing to make whatever changes you can. Okay. So you live in this world, you're tremendously illusioned. A lot of people do a lot of dumb things. They create a lot of problems for themselves. But guess what? You get another shot at it. You go on to live in the astral world after a very brief period of stay in the etheric part, electromagnetic part of the physical world, where you get to kind of see some things happening, and you get a little better understanding of the system of karma just by watching from the etheric world, and it be more of as an observer than an interactor, because you can't really do much while you're there. Most people are there for a short time, weeks, sometimes. Some people are there for a day or less. All right. In any rate, eventually go to the astral world. Now, when you go to the astral world, you're going to go to one of seven different subworlds. The two lowest are pretty nasty, but you can end up there and still choose to live differently. Or you'll go to one of the higher ones of form and live a little better life. The important thing here is that most people don't notice the Akasha that much in the astral world. Some people do. Some people enjoy trying to get into the historical parts of time and see the past. But what they see is a very loose approximation, very inaccurate, because it's composed of not just their own thought. It's composed of the thought of so many other people who are living around them in the astral world. And it's mostly creative, imaginative thought. And so it's pretty iffy. Inaccuracy more than accuracy prevails. So you can't make a lot of changes. You can make some changes in yourself by going into the astral kasha. The better thing to do, though, and a lot of people do this, is while they're living in the present, because the present is even more seriously represented in the astral world than while you're physically alive, you can directly sense the present much more, because your senses can lie outside of yourself. So instead of just being caught in the time space that your astral body seems to be in, you can extend your senses hundreds of miles away. Yeah, certainly dozens of miles in most circumstances, and up to hundreds or more away in others. So when you have this ability to move your sense instantly someplace else, then it's like you're able to join time with space much more by doing that. And you're able to accelerate your karma, and you're able to use that to gain a better sense of the astral akasha. Now, some people do this while in the astral akasha. Some people don't need to. They're just able to apply it to their present point in life. And it's like they're living out renditions of what they used to do while they were physically alive, so they don't actually have to go into the past to do it, because they can do it from the perspective of the present. When a person chooses that, they usually grow very quickly, and they're able to become more loving and more aware, more empathic. So the results are quite astonishing in that there can be quite a bit of enlightenment of people in the astral world in comparison to the physical. And for quite a number of people, they may save themselves to some extent from having to repeat much of even the physical life once they're in the astral world, because they can change the model for themselves so that when they finally do come back in the next physical life, even though the karma in their permanent animal will remain, they can quickly go through it much faster, because they've already dealt with the astral consequences and maybe the mental consequences as well. If someone corrects their creative imagination and their empathy, they become more loving, and at the same time they correct their mind, become more truthful, better thinking, more complete, then when they come back in their next lifetime, even though they may still do some stupid, crazy, selfish things rather physically here, they correct it more rapidly, and because their astral and mental senses are working pretty good, even though their physical ones might still be kind of screwed up, and they can get by in a few months what would have taken them decades to change in the last lifetime. That's the good news. You get grace. I call it grace. you get a chance with improved consciousness to make yourself into a better person. Now, not everybody does that. Some people get lost in the astral world. They become even more emotionally selfish and caught by their glamours. Glamours are really treacherous. And if they got themselves overly glamoured while they were still physically alive, they're in for big trouble when they get to the astral world, because then they're really hampered by that. That's why it's best to try to get through your fixed desires or glamours while you're physically alive. Don't wait till you get to the astral world, because then you're going to screw that part of your existence up. Okay, so finally, the next step is to go to the mental world. And you get to live in different sub-worlds in the mental world much more easily than you might have while you're in the astral world. Astral world, it's hard to get off of an astral subplane because of the glamours. But in the mental world, you've lost the astral body. You don't have it anymore. It's not going to hold you back. Now it's just a question of facing the truth. The truth about all your thinking. All the egotism and arrogance in your thought has to be vanquished. And this is when you go into the mental akasha to do this. You relive all of your egotistical, arrogant moments, all of the untruthful ones. Okay, hold on for a second. I just got a note. Our station manager wants to switch me back to the other line that I was on because he said it's better. Well, let's let him do that. I'll tell you what. We'll take a break right now. Don, if you're listening, I'm going to take a break. And we'll come back to this point. Well, actually, what I'll do is when I come back, I'm going to do a little bit of telling you about a new friend I made who, on this side of the fence, helped us with our engineering and audio equipment. So when I come back, I'll tell you about him. So, Don, take it away.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one.
Biz, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yeah, sorry for that extra break in there. Don just put us back to the original digital line off of the analog one, and sure enough, digital is superior. But we didn't know for sure, so we had to test it. Sorry about that, but again, the only way we can test this is in real-life situations. There's no test equipment. There's no way I can call in when I'm not on the air to really figure all this out. Unfortunately, we have to do it this way. So anyway, let me tell you about Pat. Pat Kaufman is a really interesting guy. Patrick, some people might call him that, but I call him Pat. And he's into sound engineering. He has an engineering background. He's a real engineer, that means. He just, some people call themselves sound engineers, you know. That's because they listen to a lot of music or something. No. Or they know how to turn a dial on a piece of hi-fi equipment. No, he's a real deal. He understands engineering. And you need an engineer in some circumstances, like we did, to be able to make things work properly. And what we're doing is trying to make it so that you guys have a better experience, of course. Now, he came over into this little niche of a studio I've got, although we're going to work on making it better, and try to get the soundboard, which is like this thing with dozens of little dials on it and stuff, to kind of work better with another piece of equipment that is the heart of the system that allows me to communicate with a station 1,000 miles away, which is where Don and Seth are, and they're also engineers, and be able to take calls, which, you know, hasn't happened very much lately because I yak too much, I know that. But the point is that do all those kinds of things and even have a third-party call in and be on the show with me or be even in the studio with me. So all that is possible with all this equipment that we've got, but we've got to kind of make it work together. What we found was the older piece of equipment I was using didn't like the board that I was using, or vice versa. And there was some degradation in it as well, and we were getting really bad noise and problems. So we just got another piece of equipment here, and it's working much better. We're really getting, I hope you can appreciate this, I should sound a lot better right now. And so we're getting the sound to the point where, you know, hopefully you can enjoy the show more because it's just easier to listen to me. Yeah. You know. At any rate, Patrick is just a great guy. He's got his own, he teaches at Glendale Community College, and he, of course, teaches sound engineering. And what he can do for you, if you're anywhere in or around the Phoenix area, of course, this show is going all over the world, I realize, but you might even be able to call him and if you had a question. I don't know if he can do things over the phone with you, but maybe. If he can help you set up any kind of sound system, any kind of, you know, it could be just something for your TV or, you know, you might be have a whole entertainment system. Or if you're doing some kind of radio work and you're into more of a professional vein, he can help you with that. He can help you in a multiple of ways. And he's a very knowledgeable guy, and I have to tell you, an amazingly humble and friendly, terrific guy. Really liked him, and I hope to get to know him better. And so if you want to call him, you can. I'm going to give you some numbers here. His cell number is 602. Let me check this number out, make sure I got it right here. Yeah, it's 602-796-4276. Say that again, 602-796-4276. And he's got an office number, 480-833-4633. All right, so those numbers will get you to Pat. And he lives in the Mesa area, but he goes all over Phoenix, so don't worry about that. As a matter of fact, he's teaching at Glendale. Glendale College, it's all the way on the other side of town, so he's all over the place. And he's reasonable in his fees, and just a generally great guy. So think about if you need him or if you need anybody like him. I mean, let's say you got a new system and you can't figure out how to plug in this or that. Really, for a very reasonable amount of money, he can help you out, and you'll be happy he did because things will turn out a lot better for you. All right. So, back to our subject tonight, time travel without temporal paradox. So, we were talking about what happens when someone screws up, which we all are doing. I mean, we're all living selfishly while we're physically alive because it's an illusion life. The energy around us is like a seed that just confounds and confuses our senses. With inaccurate senses, we end up coming to conclusions and knowledge that's totally opposite in some circumstances, the way the reality of the world is. Many people say, oh, there ain't any God. I can't see it. Well, you can't see it because you can't see your hand in front of your face, probably, because you're an illusion. But nonetheless, the illusion that we experience here, we can try to get over while we're here, which is what my job is, I think, and what I'm doing in this teaching. But it's from all sides. It comes at you from all sides, and you can find many ways to get around the illusion and to grow while you're still here. This is the best way and time to do it. But if you don't finish it here, you can go on to the astral world and live through certain Akashic experiences and live in the present time as well in the astral world. It's much easier to do that. And you may gain some enlightenment that way. That's a good thing. And finally, when all that is done, you go on to live, because you eventually wear out the senses in the astral body. It takes a lot longer. You get hundreds of years of your time here. Time is dilated, so it's less time here, but it's more time here. And eventually go on to live in the manasseh, or mineral world. And there, you live in all the subworlds, all of them. Eventually, you're going to touch the 7th, 6th, 5th, 4 subworlds, sometimes not in exactly that order even. And the results are that you're going to get a chance to live in your past, not just of this life, but whatever's left over from some other lives, too. So you may go back hundreds of years, hundreds of years. Now, I've been fortunate. I've gotten to serve a little bit there. And in my service in the mental world, I get to live other people's lives in the past. Pretty cool stuff. So I get to see things from a historical past that, you know, some things aren't even written down in the history. And I get to see that. Now, be aware that the past that I get to experience is still distorted by what remains in the Akasha. The Akasha means it's a selfish part of the past. Because that's it wouldn't be there otherwise. And it would be connected totally to the present and future. Like for a soul. That's where, and that would be in a higher mental world where I can't yet serve. But the point is that souls live there. And they get the real deal. They get the real past. Only a facsimile of the past, somewhat distorted and somewhat screwed up, exists in the lower mental world because it has a lot of untruths in it. It's not really connected to the causes very well. It's mostly effects. And so you don't get a really good history, we'll say. You get maybe a 60, 70, 75% accuracy of history, and the rest of it's nonsense based on people's selfish thinking, so they have untrue thoughts, and untrue thoughts creates an untrue history. But it gradually works itself out, gradually does, as each person tries to correct some elements of their past lives. They affect everybody else, and it makes it easier for all of us to think and find the truth, those of us who are alive here, and especially those who are alive in the mental world. Yeah, it's true. Isn't that neat? So, can you travel in time? Absolutely. Is there no temporal paradox? Yes, provided you're continuing to enlighten time. There's never a paradox. Paradoxes only occur when you separate time from space, not when you enlighten it. And so the paradox is the fact that you live selfishly. That creates some paradox in time and confuses yourself and others about reality. But there's no confusion. There's no illogical kind of things that you're going to go back and kill your grandfather so you can't exist to kill your grandfather. That can't happen because that would be a selfish act, and you would never be able to change time in the negative direction. Isn't that cool? Only enlightenment remains as a permanent fixture of what we call time. What it really becomes is a fixture of the creation of co-creation, of us and God. The co-creation of our universe is what we and God are doing. And as we enlighten ourselves, we become part of God, and God becomes part of us, and time has no paradoxes, it has no contradictions. The past becomes more and more integral with the present and the future. It just becomes one time altogether, eventually. Wow. So I hope that explains at least the very basics of some of this. And getting into a little bit further into the basics, eventually we live out even the senses of our lower mental body. That body goes away, and so does any selfish part of our personality. And what remains is the unselfish part of our personality, which becomes fused with our soul. And we and our soul are one. We just awaken to being our soul, who has always existed in the place called the higher mental world. And in that place, which is in the second subpart, subworld of the higher mental world, the soul experiences only the past that is either completely correct or non-existent. Now you might say, well, non-existent, what's that mean? Well, you see, to the soul, it doesn't need or want to know anything that isn't true. So it doesn't. It literally only has the parts of history to its accessibility in terms of the Akasha that are completely true. It doesn't have to worry about anything that isn't true because it's not part of its experience. Now, yes, it's going to have some holes compared to us. We don't have any holes necessarily. We just have lies. We have all these lies about the past now. And so we live out those lies. Well, the soul says, forget about the lies. I'll get to those eventually and I'll figure them out. Maybe I'll even be able to kind of approximate what they might be if they were truths, because the souls do that. They do a lot of that approximation. And they can kind of gather what we've done that's been selfish by what's missing. But they don't really know anything that we've done that's selfish because it's not part of their past. Not until we correct it and others help us correct it in the lower and middle world. And then gradually it gets better and better and better and eventually fills in. Now, here's an interesting thing. For a soul, a human soul, living in the second subworld, it's called, when the past is completely filled in by any human that is an extension of itself, of course, it's our creator, and we're on a journey in the lower worlds where it can't go, because it would become just as selfish as we are, by the way. As we correct this, we and the soul are joining together, and the soul is becoming complete in terms of its history and the history of everything. So it's gaining this sense of completeness in time, past, present, and future. And as it does that, it becomes omniscient, all-knowing. Because that's what would happen. If you knew everything about the past and the present and the future, what does that mean? You're all-knowing. Well, once you become all-knowing, you no longer are a soul confined to the second subworld of the middle world. You've literally, boom, ascended yourself to the next plane of reality, which is called the intuitional plane. And you've become an omniscient being. And what is called a liberated soul, because you're freed from this little confined place you were living in the mental world, and you have a much more bigger place, dimension of time and space to exist in. And time to you then becomes something that is no longer a confinement, as it is just to human souls. It becomes an expression of creativity to the liberated soul. They literally use time like we would use paint and a canvas to paint pictures. That's how they express themselves in using time, because they're omniscient. And that's only the first of the three great qualities that God can be. Is they take on this great quality of omniscience. And to them, time, the experience of time becomes very different, because unlike to us, either a human being or even the human soul, time seems to be a pressure or an obstacle to us. Whereas to a liberated soul, time is an instrument of creation, a means to motivate things that are less conscious and more selfish to become more giving and loving and enlightened, and a way for those things that are already enlightened to create significant more parts of God. This is a fascinating issue, in that time is actually something that they're living in as a dimension and accurately creating it. When you live in a dimension, you can't create from it. When you live above the dimension that time is whole in, which is the mental, you can then create more in it by living in the intuition. So it's always like you're one plane, you have to be one plane ahead in order to be a true creator in the lower plane. You can't really create in the plane that you have to take something from, in sense. So as long as you have to remove something from the plane because you have to, it's the way you're taking in your senses, you're still not being completely unselfish, and you're not fully enlightened, therefore, in that dimension. You're only fully enlightened in the dimension above that, and that's the only way that you can get to become fully creative in the dimension lower. So the lower dimension you can be fully creative in, the higher dimension you have to be fully enlightened. Wow. That's a pretty amazing thing. So creation is really what we're aiming for in the long run. We're here to try and be creative, and time is a dimension. Time is a whole dimension in the mental world. We want to become a master of time. To become a master of time, you actually have to get out of the dimension that where you're not using time for your own existence. You're using time to co-create with God and to help everything else become free and more mentally truthful. Very interesting stuff. All right. I know some of the stuff I'm going through very fast, covering a tremendous amount of ground tonight. Some of it may be a little bit too quickly for new listeners. But nonetheless, it's a pretty interesting area of science. I love time. Time to me is like the coolest thing. And especially once you understand it, once you understand what time is and how it works, it's like, holy, it's like a totally different thing than the way most people think. I mean, it's almost, it's not opposite, it's like just something that's uniquely different than the way almost everybody else seems to think about that. And it frees you to do a lot of other stuff. Now, some people say, well, how do you know all this? Well, because I live it to some extent. For those of you who are not that familiar with me, like these shows that I'm doing right now. I create the show, and I sometimes have to recreate it, like when Don stopped it there for a few minutes. I have to recreate the show, because what I'm really doing is I'm, in a matter of a few seconds, creating these 2 hours of time with you. And you can say, well, how do you create so much in so little time? And that's because enlightenment, assuming that while I'm teaching, I'm in a state of quote-unquote enlightenment for this particular subject, enlightenment gives me the opportunity to do exactly that. I'm doing what I just described. I'm a living example. You may not believe me. You might say, oh, yeah, you're just saying that. You spent the last week figuring this whole thing out, didn't you? You probably have little notes all around your desk and everything. Don't forget to mention this right now at 7:23. Yeah. No. The truth is, I've got many, many witnesses to this, that I create the show just a few seconds before I go on. That's it. Sometimes I create the title of the show a few minutes before I go on, and the only reason I give a few minutes notice is because a lot of people have to do a lot of things to get the title up before I get on. And sometimes I don't even give them time to do that. So that's how it's done. And can anybody do what I'm doing? Well, obviously, I'm a human being. You all can do what I'm doing. What is required? Well, let's get to that practical side of things. What's required is that if you're going to do it in the physical world, you have to eliminate most of the forces in your senses, which means you need to unify the senses in your body. So that's called yoga. But it's not the kind of physical yoga, you know, which I really am not the greatest at by any stretch. It's a mental kind of yoga. It's unifying from the mental senses down, the senses in your bodies, so that they work together. And when the senses work together, they don't separate time from space. When they work separately, or only one or two at a time against the other ones, you're separating time from space. Because the way that you're taking energy from the environment, that's what sensing is. You're taking some energy to process it, to gain some information from whatever's going on around you. That separates time from space. The more you do it separately within the of a body, the more time and space, significantly much more time and space is separated. The amount of quantity is in this ratio. If we talk about the physical body, if you're using one or two senses at a time, and you have a total of seven senses in the physical body, the result is that what will take you, let's say, 12 hours to process. I'm going to give you accurate time here. Let's say about 15 hours to process is going to be, you're going to be able to, let's say if you take those senses and you put them together and you unify them in the physical body, it's going to take you maybe 3 or 4 seconds to be able to process the same amount of information. Okay, so 15 hours, an hour has 60 times that times 60 times that, to get down to a second, then you just multiply that times 4. And that's the ratio that you end up with in comparison to having split senses to having unified senses in the physical body. You might be saying, whoa, well, that's a lot of time. And that's just for sensing a relatively small amount of information. We process a lot of information. And so now you start seeing that there's a huge amount of information that never gets processed into knowledge because there's just not enough time to do it if your senses aren't unified. The other obstacle is, let's say you unified your senses, but the personality was unwilling to allow the higher self, that's a part of our soul structure, and our soul to get involved in the creation of the knowledge. And it only wanted to do it itself. Well, the personality functions hundreds of times slower in its thought than the soul does, and about close to 1,000 times slower than the component of the soul, the higher self, does, which is part of our, some people call it inner guide or solar angel. So that's a huge amount of difference. So not only do you have the separated senses causing all this change in time, now you go from that to the personality trying to create knowledge in comparison to the knowledge created by someone who's functioning in their soul consciousness, and it's close to 1,000 times difference that way. Huge amount. So most people are not even experiencing, in terms of their sense, what someone like me who's doing the show might be experiencing. They're not sensing the same things. And even if they could be given to the point where they are actually sensing those things, they would not be able to use the information they got from the senses very effectively unless they were thinking from their soul and higher self. And the results would be still 1,000 times slower. So if, when you multiply all those numbers out, you can start seeing how it would be possible to do what I'm suggesting can be done. Now, how does that affect time travel then? Well, when you can sense things at that level, and when you can conceptualize those things into a knowledge system, your understanding or consciousness, same word, consciousness, understanding, grows enormously. And your ability to travel in time commensurately goes up. Because time travel is nothing more than consciousness expansion. That's another way to see this whole picture, if you're following what I'm saying. You're really talking about somebody becoming enormously expanded in consciousness. And as they do become more expanded in consciousness, they're able to travel in time. And again, there's no temporal paradox because that person is doing it from the standpoint of enlightenment. Not full enlightenment, maybe, but it's some level of enlightenment. And the results are that there can be no contradictions in what they co-create with their creator about the past, the present, and the future. It all fits together wonderfully. And they won't have any problems. Just amazing stuff. And it's self-fulfilling in terms of those ideas. All right, so more practical. I guess I call this practical. Tonight it's a little less practical than usual because it's still big-time concepts, isn't it? We're really talking about huge concepts here. So let's say that some of you out there would like to experience some of this. You say, well, okay, I want to do what you're doing. Well, the first thing is to examine your motive because, you see, you can't do it if you're doing it for any selfish reason because it's counterproductive. It is contrary to the idea of being in selfless service to others. You must be in selfless service, and therefore you can't be thinking of yourself in order to achieve these results that we're trying to do, which is time travel. So if you really want to travel in time, and you want to do so in ways especially that are reasonably accurate, and you don't want to just live in some garbage about what people have fantasized that is not true about time at all in the past, then you need to be selflessly serving. And this needs to be done on a daily basis. The way you can achieve this is through spiritual discipline. Now, that's a whole other subject, and that's covered, of course, in Life's Hidden Meaning and a little bit in some of the other stuff I've written. And so what you need to be doing is thinking about this one, that every moment that you can be focused out onto other people and not about anything about yourself, not seeking or desiring anything for yourself, and only seeking to serve so that others can do the same. That's the point, so others can do the same. That's a soul's level of service. Each time you do that, you're getting closer and closer to being more effective in time travel. And you're getting closer and closer to being able to join the past, present, and future and live in what is spiritually called a now. Now, some people use the word now and don't even understand what it means, but a now is where the three parts of time are connected to the same event pretty much equally. That's a completed part of time. And it comes from selfless service. Now, could you do this and not even know anything about time? Yes. And then would you still be able at some point to experience time travel? Yes. You don't have to actually have full understanding of time itself to be able to do some of this because the requirements are more about service, and your service may not be to fully understand time or anything else, but to serve others in some other way. And there's a multitude of ways to do that. But a lot of people do understand, eventually. I don't want you to think that everybody that's having this experience has no idea what's going on. And they do understand it more often than not. I just said it's possible not to. And still be able to accomplish amazing amounts of it while you're in service to other people. Now, are there other people that serve in the monastic world? Yeah, a whole bunch of people. Most of them are far beyond anything I said about myself. Most of them serve there because they're physically and astrally dead. There's a few that serve who are physically alive and others that serve who are astrally alive. And do so then when they go to sleep, they're fully awake, but in the mental world, so in service. The point is that the numbers are quite large, but they aren't huge, not on Earth. And it's planet-specific. So when you serve, you're going to be serving in Earth's mental world, not in some planet 1,000 light-years away. Be impractical to do so, by the way. And so the service aspect can be done by anybody at any time. It's much more difficult to do it while you're illusioned and highly selfish in the physical form. But this is the place to try to do it, because the more you do it here, the better you'll vastly be better later. And whatever you accomplish here is many, many times more creative and co-creative with God, because this is the most difficult realm to both create life in and to create more of God, godly life. And that's what God wants. God wants all life to create more godly life, but on its own choices and in its own ways. And here in the physical world, it's most difficult because of the illusion factor. we want to come here when we're in our soul. Our soul creates us as humans. And then we go through three stages where we develop ourselves to becoming a human being, eventually get born in a physical body. And that process, almost always, is a difficult one. It's not a simple thing. Being born a human being in a physical world is extremely difficult. Again, the forces are enormous, so bad that the soul on its own, if it did the same thing and it didn't create us to do it, it would become just as illusion as we are. So it says, well, it's not going to come here just to become illusion, so it creates us. We have the bodies and senses. It doesn't. And it just lets us go, hopes that we will do well, and remember who we really are, a soul. Most of us forget, become very selfish, great illusions, waste most of our life, waste a lot of time, create a lot of karma, and then go on. You don't have to do that. Spiritual discipline means you can focus on one sense at a time in each of the bodies you have, and try to get that sense to work more with the other senses. First you try to get it to be more accurate on its own, and then you try to get it to join, keeping the same level of accuracy with another sense, and another, and another, and another, until you get all seven senses in a body working together about at the same level of accuracy, and that produces enlightenment, and it allows you to get the information very quickly, very accurately, both, that then your soul, if you give it to your soul, and not keep it as in a personal self-interest way, to serve others. And that's the ticket. That's the way that you can achieve this enlightenment that's needed to time travel. Okay, so let me continue on with the examples that you may find yourself in at some point. And that is that all of us are going to do some of this at some point, unless we're evil. And evil people choose not to go into mental Akasha. They never have it as an experience, be stupid, yes. And they never get the joy of changing all those arrogant and egotistical thoughts they had that weren't truthful. They experience high levels of forces from it, but they try to get other people to deal with the forces. So, and by their own desires, they attract the force from the evil people. The evil people say, hey, yeah, you can have as much force as you would. I'll give you lots of forces. That gives them power. And the people who receive the forces, it gives them a lot of problems. And it wears out their senses and their bodies. This makes their life miserable. But they think they're getting something good out of it because they have desires that are getting met in some way, they think. Okay. So, then the question becomes, if all of us are going to eventually do this time travel, can we improve the quality of it, even if we can't do some of it while we're physically alive? Can we improve the quality of it while we're here? Yes, through spiritual discipline, but something else as well. There's three things. You need the spiritual discipline, but you also need, if you're going to do an improvement process, then you do need knowledge. Knowledge applied with understanding. So you've got to raise your consciousness through knowledge and study here so that you're prepared better when you get to other places that you might be a little more successful at being less selfish. So you're going to try to beat your selfishness here, but you're not going to succeed completely. But you're going to prepare yourself when you get to the point where you're using less senses, because you're not going to use your physical senses anymore, and you're not going to live in a physical universe, part of the universe that's physical, then you're going to be using astral energy, different physics, a lot easier to live there. And now the opportunity will present itself, provided you have understanding, consciousness, that came from both knowledge that you've applied at some point, and has some level of intelligent activity. And it's giving you kind of like a boost up. It's sort of like you've been preparing, even if you weren't that successful while you were physically alive. Then when you get to the astral world, you can do a lot more in terms of being able to unify the past and the present and give yourself a lot more opportunity to beat the glamours that are going to plague you, because they plague everybody that goes in. And maybe get a handle on that particular dilemma. The wonderful thing about it is if you are able to do that, then you will experience the revamping of your past while you're still in the astral world instead of going to the mental. And you'll be able to serve others by directly applying your understanding of all the emotional things that you were doing wrongly while you were physically alive, and also in your earlier time in the astral world, if that be the case. And you'll be able to directly go and help other people become more loving in a more unconditional fashion. That makes astral life just wonderful compared to what most people experience. It's true, most people get a lot of desires met initially, but then they grow and become a plague to them. Instead, you get rid of the desires, and it's replaced with service and joy, and eventually bliss. That sounds better? Good, because that's where you're headed for. And you get to experience the lives of other people while you serve them, while you're in the astral world. And so you start experiencing time travel. Yeah, you get to live through their creative imagination, their own life. And you get to experience in the now, in the present, not so much the past, their life from their perspective in the present, thinking about the past and thinking about it in creative imagination. While they're imagining it, you can enter into their imagination and experience what they've experienced in their emotions, and you're changing on the spot emotional affect into loving experiences. You're trying to help them to do that. That's a really cool thing to do. Now, some people don't do that much later in the astral life, if they make it to the second subworld, or sometimes the first, most of the second, where they're in service. But you can do that much earlier if you understand this business about time travel from perspective here and other things they teach. You can actually get that experience. Now, some of you say, well, I am already astral traveling. Can I do it myself? Yeah, if you can astral travel, and you're doing it not for just the experience of astral traveling, but you want to serve in the astral world, then you can accomplish the same thing while you're physically alive and doing some out-of-body astral traveling. I don't necessarily recommend that for most people, because the danger is if you hiccup and you become trapped by some glamour in the astral world while you're there traveling, you come back to damaged senses here. You have damaged astral senses and some damaged etheric physical sense that corresponds to it. So there's a great penalty if you screw up while you're astral traveling. But nonetheless, for those of you who are doing that, and that's what you want to enter into this other part of the experience, yeah, you can achieve that. Now, some of you might be saying, well, what about the going into the astral Akasha? Why not do that? The problem with the astral Akasha is that, for the most part, it's so inaccurate that it's pretty much a waste of time, pretty much. I mean, in certain circumstances, it does make sense when you can determine that the accuracy is over 50%. Then you can get into the astral Akasha of someone or a group of people, and you can experience time travel from that and work more into the past aspect of their creative imagination. But it's much easier and probably faster to do it from the present, using someone's creative imagination as it is today, without their quote-unquote astral memories, because their astral memories are going to be pretty well messed up, and it's going to be hard to get through all that screwball stuff they may have in it. What is an astral imagination? It's a combination of the creative imagination with the feelings of the experience. And most people's feelings of the experience are so far different from what really happened. It's hard to get to any level of accuracy. And that's the problem. And we all do this, by the way. When we experience something, we tend to alter our affect about it as time goes by. A creative imagination may be fairly accurate. I mean, like, it could be over 50% accurate. But our feelings about it radically alter from the time that the experience took place, which is the real thing, and who we are today. Let me give you an example. Think of yourself when you were 7 years old, okay? And let's say that when you were 7 years old, the ice cream person came driving, it was probably an ice cream man at that time, came driving down the street, you know, ringing the bells and ice cream. You know, my kids liked ice cream, right? And you ran and hoped that they hadn't run out yet of your favorite flavor, whatever that is. That was at least my experience, because they always did run out of my favorite flavor. Or they didn't have it with them that day. I love it. You know, they always say, well, I'll have it next week, or I'll have it tomorrow. You know? Okay. And I would have feelings about that, right? But most of those feelings are gone. I can remember, most of us can remember the experience. Oh, yeah, I remember. Wasn't it the good humor man? I can remember that. But the feelings of it are mostly gone and altered by our feelings since that time about so many other factors. A lot of factors. But if you could get back to the feelings, then you can have a true historical account in astral terms through the astral akasha of what really took place. Hard to do. Very hard to do. That's why it's easier to do in the present, because in the present you pick up some of the past from other prior experiences, but you're dealing with the feelings as they are right now. And that's a lot better. You can see what I'm talking about in terms of getting to the accuracy of the time travel effectively. It isn't exactly time travel at that point. You could say, well, it is and it isn't, because it's kind of the present, but it's also the past, because it instantly becomes the past each second it goes by, right? Yeah, that's true. And you can extrapolate so much more about the past if you get into the Akasha, the real Akasha, astrally, if you have some of the present already understood. Then you can start applying some of the differences from how you see a person reacting then compared to now, that sort of thing. Not easy to do, but you can. Okay. So, where else can this sort of thing become a tremendous advantage to us? Well, the next thing is, while we sleep, we can serve in the mental world from either the physical or astral. So, the neat thing about this is that for each hour that someone spends living virtuously, they gain about somewhere around a quarter to a half an hour of the ability to serve in mental time, in the mental world. So the good news is, for a lot of people anyway, that you end up with some conglomerates of time. And this is per body. So this, and what I just gave you is for the physical body. So if you're serving in the physical body, and you're serving through physical means, which is cooperation and sharing with others, and you serve for, like, let's say 16 hours a day, you can take those 16 hours, and you're going to gain maybe 8 hours, if you're in service most of the time, you're going to gain about 8 hours that you can spend in mental time, in your mental world serving. Now, the same is true about the astral world. Now, you can say, well, I'm not living in the astral world, but you really are. You're living with feelings, and you have an astral body. So you add to that what I just said, but you add to it a factor of about 20. So now the 8 hours turns into 160 hours when you're more astrally being virtuous while you're being virtuous physically. So two different bodies, two different ways of serving. And that can amount to a huge amount of time. But it's hard to do this. I'm going to tell you right now, it's hard to do those numbers. Hard to do, you know, that many hours in a day. And so you pick up 160 hours for the 8 hours in the astral time, and you pick up about 8 hours in the in the physical time. And then there's some mental time also you pick up in service, depending upon if you're doing things like what I'm doing. And even if you don't serve very much in your physical and your astral body, if you just serve in your mental body, you can pick up huge amounts. You can serve just a couple hours and be able to serve in the mental world for days in mental time. If your service is through mental service, mental work, mental activity is what the correct word I should say. So if you're doing it that way, then that's the amount of time that you're going to pick up doing that. And in practical terms, and that's the best way to do it, obviously, it's also the hardest. The hardest thing to do is to do service that is manasic. The easiest thing to do, although it's not easy in any case, is to do service that is physical. Now, a lot of you are going to say, well, I thought physical is where your most illusion is, and that's the hardest thing to do. Well, it's the hardest thing to do in terms of in terms of the energy model. It's the easiest thing to do in terms of changing the bodies to be spiritual. So spiritual service is easiest to attain physically in comparison to mentally, with the astral in between. And the ease at which you can do it gives you less time earned, so to speak, in the mental world. It isn't really someone making a time clock and figuring it out. It has to do more with the way the energies work and the model works in terms of how the universe was designed. It is not anybody keeping track of anything. It's built into the physics. And so for a lot of people, if they're working on more of the physical model, they could gain, let's say 8 is the maximum, they could gain 1 or 2 hours of mental plane service from trying to be reasonably disciplined and serving in the physical sense. That's a tremendous gain, because during the time, you would go, while you're sleeping, to a mental sub-room. You would learn somewhat by trial and error, but there's those servers, even in the mental world, who will be of some assistance to help show you how to do this, to help others who are caught in the mental akasha and have not yet gotten out of that. They could spend hundreds of years there if someone doesn't help them. And you can start experiencing the past of these people, and the past of those people is not just the past life in the last 50 years, 100 years. It could go back several or more lifetimes. You get to experience life in many different realms. And you actually experience that life. It's just like you're there, because you are there. And you're helping interact with them and helping to change their way of thinking about their surroundings and the people they're interacting with. And you get to do this every night. Every night you can do it. While you're physically alive. I'm not talking about going and dying and all that stuff. But you can do that too later. But this is a way that you can do it today. And this is entirely possible. Time travel is possible today, not sometime in the vast future. No problem with temporal paradox, because all you're doing is enlightening. And then the more you enlighten your body, the closer you're getting to God. Nothing you can do would be upsetting the continuum of the planet. Only thing that's happening is you're bringing karma closer and closer to God. Now, the one thing I will mention about this is you can never serve somebody who has common karma with you. If your karma is the same as theirs, and you try to help them overcome their karma, you get caught in their same illusion. You won't be able to creatively help them see ways of rethinking the situation. You can do it while you're in the Akasha with them, and you're then controlling the experience in the Akasha. You can alter the Akasha as necessary to get them to think more truthfully. You can also have literally conversations with them outside of the Akashic experience, in the present sense, while they're meditating. They will think of you as more of an angel or helping person. It's a pretty cool experience to have, but it's an amazing experience, really. So you have that as an option. And all of this is possible. Everything I'm telling you is possible. You can directly achieve time travel. Now, you can't achieve time travel because you just want to have that experience. You can't achieve it because you've read my stuff or somebody else's. And you can't achieve time travel just because you can have an out-of-body experience. You have to be in an active state of service to others to experience this wondrous event for yourself. But hopefully I've given you some idea about what it's like and why it is possible and how it actually works with the physics, so to speak, or about without getting into mathematics and all the other issues that might really get people turned off to it. Remember this, that each time that you're traveling in time, using the model that I'm explaining, you're getting closer to your creator. Every time you're putting the past back in order, so to speak, making it more truthful, making it more complete, more loving, and more of a part of our creator, you're getting closer to being that creator yourself and to experiencing the creator in the process. You're getting that tremendous joy that this type of time travel provides, not the fantasies and fictitious stuff, of becoming one with those that you're serving in their time. And you can eventually do it for yourself in the sense that it is possible to eventually enter your own Akashic issues. And then you'll have the help of your solar angel and sometimes another helper who doesn't have to share the same karma. And you can do so from a completely, we'll say, aware standpoint. We are not semi-conscious, as many of these people that you're serving will be. But you'll be fully conscious. And you can undo lifetimes of karma in literally a few years of work. It's possible to literally do this from the inside out and experience the joy of your own time travel changes for your own service to others in the future. Because if you change the problems in yourself, you're changing your ability to serve others in the future because you don't have as much problems, karmic issues that will stop you from co-serving, from being able to be close with them, and from helping them to freely think and find truth easier. Because each person that corrects the past makes it easier for all others to accurately understand it in both how they feel about it and how they think about it. So you have that as a great opportunity. Well, we are definitely running out of time here. I went a bit over, but we kind of started a little late. And at any rate, I've got to give the folks here a chance to get the next show on. So I hope this has been of some interest to you. Hopefully it's been of some explanation of a very difficult subject. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.